Hi, today is August 13th, 2023. I'm Todd Agasa Ward, my good friend John Westfall, who is back from his super secret mission, and our mutual good friend and frequent guest panelist, Don Sorcinelli, here to talk with us. But before we get started, I wanted to thank Steve Hughes for pitching in last week when the good Dr. Westfall was unexpectedly unavailable to co-host.
I woke up on Sunday morning last week. So on Saturday morning, when I was in Washington on super secret mission called the APA conference, I woke up and I had that like throat thing where you're like, maybe I just had a dry out.
Right.
You know, I was in a hotel room. Another thing. I'll talk about my wonderful experience with Marriott later. But you know, that day I felt a little weird. And then by Sunday morning at 1 a.m., I woke up and went, no, this is the flu. And it knocked me out for a good 2 days. And then I got back up and then had just enough time to get a sinus infection. So that was fun, you know. So now I'm almost completely back to normal as I ever am.
All right. And welcome, Don. Good to have you back on.
Oh, thank you. Sorry to hear about that, John. But you know, what would a flu be without a sinus?
There you go.
Well, I think I had a sinus infection that had just been hanging out there for a while, but the flu helped it really take.
Right.
That lowering of my immune system just sort of really helped it flare up much better.
Yeah, it breached your defenses and said, "Let me in. Put me in, coach."
Yeah. Yeah. Now, I'm not thrilled about the whole thing, but.
You sound pretty good.
And I have to start teaching tomorrow. So,
oh boy,
I have to start putting out performances again twice daily. So we'll see.
On a more serious note, for those of you who have not heard what happened here in Hawaii over on the island of Maui and also Big Island, both had some wildfires. I just wanted to note that one of the places that is being recommended to provide donations to is called the Hawaii Community Foundation and Maui Strong Fund. And I'll put that link in. But more important, perhaps more practically, for those of you who often wonder about whether it's safe or wise to donate to a certain charity, I'm going to put a link in to charitynavigator.org, which is a great site for looking at a charity and seeing how efficient they are. And they provide sort of a charity score from 1 to 100% and a star rating. I think it's 1 to 4 stars. So if for whatever charity you're looking at, charitynavigator.org has always seemed to be a pretty decent site to vet things before you donate, because you don't want your money to be literally wasted. All righty. Speaking of wasted money, but anyway, so again, unless you've been hiding under a rock, huge fires. The numbers coming out of Lahaina are just awful. So give it a thought. All righty. Speaking of wasted money, so I've been wasting about $56 a month on my landline telephone. Now, the reason I've done that is because I used to work for the local, the ILEC, you know, the incumbent carrier. And so I bought into all the stuff I used to tell people why you should have a landline. And it's all still true. You know, it's more likely to survive in various kinds of situations, including power outages, because they provide their own power through the phone lines for Ring and that sort of thing. But increasingly, all I get is spam phone calls. And also they've been very unreliable. They've just sort of failed just because. You know, not because something happened, but just because they fail. I was down for like a week. I mean, it's not a big deal these days with cell phones and everything, but still, they didn't even refund me, you know, for the loss of service. So I said, well, if it's going to go down just on a nice, beautiful day with no earthquake, tsunami, fire, whatever, how reliable are they going to be in a real disaster? And what we found out this past week is not very. When lines melt and are broken, it's hard to get them back up. You know, having worked for them, I can attest to that. And so really in an emergency, they're going to go down too. And in fact, they did go down in West Maui. So anyhow, but I made the decision before that disaster occurred. And I figured, well, I'm so old and retired now that if I die, I die, you know, so it's an emergency. Who needs a landline? It's all moot. At any rate, so Sven Johansson told me about Ooma, O-O-M-A. And so I, like months and months ago, and of course, you know, it took me months to stop procrastinating and actually spend money on the hardware. So that came in a couple of weeks ago, end of July. And then I put in my request for a, port my number to it right away. And that's supposed to happen like in the next week, next couple of days actually. So thanks, Sven, for that. And oh, for those wondering, why didn't I just port the number to my cell phone and, you know, just have two numbers on my cell phone? I really don't trust my cell phone carrier.
So, boy, we're having problems with your landline, and now we don't trust. I think you might want to consider using Semaphore.
Yeah, and you might ask, well, why do I care about my landline phone number anyway? Right, enough to I have to pay to. Not only do I have to pay to port it, by the way, because I'm in Hawaii, and if you're in Hawaii, Alaska, or Puerto Rico, UMA, instead of having a one-time porting fee, is an annual porting fee of $30 a year. But, you know, considering I'm spending $56 a year or whatever, it's $55 a year, a month, I should say, that's fine, you know?
You know, when you talk about not trusting your any of your provider, I think of a strategy that I heard the other day that, you know, anymore, conspiracy theories abound and people will challenge everything. And right. The strategy I heard was great. It was basically one up anyone who challenges you.
Yeah.
So if you say things like, you know, the moon landing comes up and they go, oh, you.
Oh, I love that
moon.
I love
you. Look at them and go, oh, you believe in the moon? And, you know, so if you accelerate it up farther than they even. Yeah. You know, it's basically an antidote to the whole thing.
That's a dangerous way to go, though, because you could really open up a can of worms and have to come up with some big.
Oh, Don, the three of us, no problem. You know that, man. We can what about anybody and anything. Pick a topic, any topic, even when we know nothing about. We could do it.
You believe we could be stumped? I don't think that's a possibility either.
Yeah,
we know each other.
I'd be more to believe in the moon at that rate,
and the stars.
Yeah.
But Todd, by the way, when you talk about dropping a line, I think it was funny in the landline for us became 100% solicitation by the time my kids were both with their phones as teenagers.
Right,
all the communication that went on. By that time was sell to sell or and it reached a point where I think we realized really we're sitting there. It's like, when has anybody other than a solicitation called us on our, and we could not for the life of us call.
The only reason I'm keeping my number and having this, you know, added expense, which, you know, and so, well, why have an added expense at all, is because I'm lazy. And I'm too lazy to go look up all the things that are associated with my, you know, my home phone number for verification. And I don't want to wake up one day and go, oh, I need to like do an insurance thing or something. An insurance company says, you know, let's verify you. What's your home phone? Let's call your home phone number, you know.
Well, I now know how long I've had certain rewards programs when the number you push. I'm like, oh, wait, that's still the old home line with the number we have on.
Well,
we must have been on this rewards program for a while.
Yeah. So, anywho, so that's the thank you to Sven for that one. So that's happening now, and I will soon be saving, well, not $55 a month, because I did go with the premium plan, which has a whole bunch of features dealing with spam, and I thought it'd be kind of interesting to have any rate. And, you know, who knows? If somebody tries to call my land number because that's all they know, they'll still work. You know, like a real person, not a spammer. But spammers too. But it's supposed to have a good spam control filter. So we shall see. Okay. So thank you to Sven for that one. And the next one is, you know, John and I don't know about you, I don't know about you, Don, but John and I have been wrestling with note-taking apps for years now. You know, after Evernote became like worse and worse and worse, and we gave up on it. And I know John's had a couple of things he's been using, and I've used like a bunch of stuff, which I like. I like Google Keep, and I've kind of made peace with Microsoft OneNote. But I've been reading over the years, I've read so many good things about Notion. I thought, well, let's try it. They have a nice free plan that seems to do what I need. So I finally tried Notion, and you know, it's pretty good. And I just wanted to mention that it's Notion. So they have apps for everything. They have a nice web interface, which is all the things that John and I kind of ask for in our note-taking app/service. So I've been making peace with that. And as I think John knows, Don is showing his rocket book, which is cool.
Yeah.
By the way.
It's interesting. Yeah. As soon as you're like, well, Don, you know, we don't know about that. Yeah, no, my head started bobbing up and down. I've been in the same dilemma for how many years? I don't know how many different note-taking apps I've jumped between and, you know, going from, you know, are they note-taking apps where I'm forced to type? Are they things I could do on a tablet?
Right.
Are they, you know, this? I've gone round and round in circles. And I think one of the only things I've come back to conclusively is, ironically, I'm a pretty good handwriting person. And I'm also fairly fast at that.
Yeah.
And I don't...
That's a long skill, by the way.
Yeah, it is. Now, granted, it's not cursive.
Yeah.
But
don't be silly.
You know, I credit a ninth grade drafting class with providing me with good handwriting. But what I discovered, too, is when I type, even though I shouldn't do this, I find myself editing far more in real time and either, I mistyped immediately going back or, maybe I should change.
Right. Interesting.
I seem to flow more natural.
Oh. Freeform, trademark Apple, by the way. But
maybe it's because I know how quickly I can erase something.
Right.
But I seem to like focus and write better. And while there's Rocketbook and there's other parallels to it, are all getting better and better each day at being able to do the OCR. They're not perfect. But the fact that you can then take that data, even if you just if you JPEG it and stuff it into a note, to, you know, like you said, a OneNote for storage purpose. I just seem to be, that seems to work for me right now, but
yeah.
I'm sure in a week or two, I'll jump to something else.
Well,
yeah.
You know, you bring up an interesting point about handwriting. And I recently have had a conversation with one of my colleagues because she's thinking about requiring students to go back to handwritten notes.
Oh, interesting.
And we have, you know, there's evidence on both sides. There is a lot of evidence that handwritten note helps memory a little bit more because it requires you to do deeper processing. And so, you know, we've all gotten that point where we start taking notes by typing and we're just typing, you know, just going in one ear straight into the keyboard and you don't remember it at all. And so that's what, in some cases, we're trying to guard against. But I'm the person that goes, you know, I took all my notes in college on my computer, on a laptop using just Word. And I don't think I would have liked very much a teacher saying, no, I know what's best for you. You need to
handwrite this.
Yeah.
And so that's what will stop me. I always think about my students from my perspective. Would I be annoyed with myself if I had to live?
That's an interesting way to think about it. Yeah.
But it is an interesting debate these days about with all the different ways to take notes, are you actually helping yourself or hurting yourself?
Yeah.
And you really have to know yourself well.
You know, I was a real fan of LiveScribe, which you guys might remember, that had a special pen and special dotted paper. And I thought my handwriting was okay enough back then, 15 years ago. But I recently, I don't know if you guys know this, but Google's cloud skills learning thing on the web, they opened up their generative AI course for free, so you don't have to pay anything. And so I said, well, I've got a little bit of time, and I'm interested in it because it's what I did like 40 years ago. Well, it wasn't generative, of course, but so I thought, well, I'll go through the course, at a leisurely pace. And I started taking notes by hand because I thought, well, unlike John, I should say. I grew up in a time when we had stone tablets and chisels, and so a paper and pencil paper and pen is way easier than stone tablets and chisels. I thought that'd be okay. I can't read my handwriting, which is the problem. So that's why I started. I said, well, let's go look at a new note taking app. Maybe that'll interest me in taking notes again, and which is why I went to Notion. And I have to say, it's worked out pretty well. I haven't tried Notion in a tablet form with a pen. I'm just typing. But it's interesting. You know, and the other thing is, I've never done an online web course, I think, maybe. I've set up a lot for staff, for learning opportunities, but I never had the time to take any myself. Those people on the pre-recorded web chats, or web seminars, they don't stop talking. There's no pauses. You have to check your notes. But I can pause them, which is kind of nicer, actually. And that's, for me, that's why typing my text out works well. I got to go see if I can do diagrams with it, too. I haven't tried it with a pen. I've just been doing it in a Chromebook. The other thing I wanted to note is that, so by the time I got my first couple of jobs, the notebook, what did we call them? We call them laptops back then? I guess the laptop computers finally came up. You know, 7-pound behemoths.
Portable computers.
Yeah, portable computers. Yeah, I didn't have the big 15-pound compact, but I did have an actual laptop, so about 7 pounds. And I remember being criticized by, you know, middle and senior management for bringing a computer into a meeting. They said, you know.
I remember that. Speaking of which, when we said, you know how I knew the phrase portable computing right off the top of my head? Because I found a box in my attic.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
What was it?
It was a 486SX laptop.
Wow.
That was
powerhouse.
Portable computer was what it was, what was on the box. And yeah. So, yeah, when you say that, I'm like, I can't believe that's still up in that attic. But,
That the 486SX was quite a, you know, computer. Yeah. You know, I think it didn't have the math coprocessor that was in the bigger DX, but it was plenty fast. And when I did a project for Blue Cross, the local Blue Cross Blue Shield, many, 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 many years ago, and I built there, and I'm holding up my hands for people on the audio podcast. I built a server of a couple of 486XXs. Running Unix, by the way. I think, what was I running? Interactive Unix? I forget who it was. But at any rate, running Unix, and it was handling a dozen 9600 baud modems to bring remittances in from medical providers. So it was a powerhouse in its day, you know?
Well, the company I worked for when I had my consulting business back in the day ran on Unix.
Yeah.
Flavors, and I actually had this. I had a DX tower.
Ooh,
I had in my office. I had Windows desktops, but I had a DX tower too, so I could do stuff off of that. And it's funny, but you know, the other day was it you, Todd, that made reference the other day to Kermit? Somebody,
yes, Kermit.
But yeah, somebody posted about Kermit, and that's one of the things that I've flash back to, having to use Kermit as a protocol back in those days.
Kermit was awesome.
Yep, for transferring things back and forth. Mm-hmm. But yeah, definitely the fact that people, like I said, the fact that we called laptops a portable computer, was still cracks me up.
Yeah, it caused many a shoulder injury, but still portable.
Oh yeah,
before I forget, speaking of desktops and laptops, IBM PC turned, I don't know, 42, 43, just a few days ago. So happy birthday to the, you know, no longer existing IBM PC. And I should know, speaking of 486s, so I was a contractor to MSN before it launched. And I remember going to one of their server clusters. Well, it wasn't a cluster in the way we think of clusters now. It's just a bunch of servers in the same room. Yeah, we called them a cluster back then.
A cluster of servers.
Exactly. They were not clustered. They were not clustered.
Congregation.
And so
servers, the gathering.
Yes. MSN.com, you know, aka Microsoft Network, I think they had three server farms. And we happened to go into one of them in Redmond. And it was a giant room with 46 workstations, because there were no servers back then. You know, this is 1995. There were no Windows servers back then. Was NT out yet? I can't remember.
Yeah,
I
don't, five was.
Yeah,
it was good, but it was out.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, you're talking the 4.0
Yeah. And I don't think there were actual physical servers you could actually buy, like, you know, pizza boxes or anything. I think everything was like a tower rededicated.
That same office had a second 486DX that was running Windows NT 4 as Windows NT server. Yeah.
And so that's what MSN was running on. It was running on hundreds and hundreds, I forget the exact number, of 486DX boxes heating up a giant room in Redmond, you know?
That's funny. I was on the other end. I was actually a beta tester for MSN. I was on the other side of the fence, Todd. In that same time frame.
Yeah.
I had in my office, I was actually running beta for MSN. And I was also running Windows 95 betas too.
Chicago.
Oof, that was some hot stuff.
Project Chicago, 20 discs.
To this day, the only thing I was ever somewhere at midnight to buy was Windows 95.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, we're dating ourselves here.
And a USA.
Yeah. Something else that no longer exists. Oh, well, since we're going to ancient, so as you may or may not know, CompUSA number one was in, where was it? It's an area northeast of Dallas. I can't think of what the name of that area was. Anyway, since I was going to Dallas every month back when I was working at GTE, one of those trips I said, I need to make a trip, a pilgrimage, if you will, to CompUSA number one. And so I did. I think it was in Plano. Yeah. So I made a pilgrimage up to Plano, and I also found the Incredible Universe, if you remember that. I think that was the biggest Incredible Universe. Might have been number one, because, you know, Tandy is based out of Texas, out of Fort Worth. So, yes, I have made my pilgrimage to CompUSA number one.
I jokingly said that there are two things that one of them did eventually cross the Mississippi, but two things, and again, dating myself, that you had to cross the Mississippi to experience. One was Coors back in the day. And I said the other one was Fry's Elixir.
Oh, Fry's, yeah. I remember our friends from Europe used to make a pilgrimage to Fry's wasn't in Seattle, but it was around somewhere near Seattle, right? And
Yeah, it was on the way to it was south of Seattle on the way to the airport.
Yeah.
It was right off the highway. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
So Fry's. Something else that I think no longer exists or pretty close.
And that was a sad day. That to me, when I heard that they were going down, that's sort of like saying we're tearing down we're tearing down a religious temple.
yeah, Fry's.
The one in Seattle was the first one I ever got to see, and when I laugh about the wall o' motherboards that existed.
Oh yeah,
that was literally where most today you would see like a retail where they have all the TVs. In that kind of space to say no.
I think I've only been to one Fry's. It must have been, I think it was somewhere near San Jose. And am I remembering this correctly? Did they have like refrigerated units of ice cream cones too at the checkout stand?
I don't know.
It was kind of eclectic.
My first visit was with last week's guest that helped out.
Yeah.
Steve and I were there, and I think we were both just mesmerized. If they did have ice cream, we were just too blinded by the technology.
The hardware and the specials, the hardware specials.
Yeah. Oh, it's like you could build from the chip up at that place. It was insane.
The good old days. But but going back to notes, the one thing I haven't tried that I've been hearing good things about is called Obsidian. And so I'm going to take a look at Obsidian next, but I'm just going to stick with Notion until I finish my little free coursework. But yeah, Obsidian is something I'll check out next. I don't know why I'm doing this, because I really have nothing to take notes about except for these little special one-offs.
Well, that's your next thing, is you have to find things to take notes about.
Todd is taking notes about research.
Take notes about researching.
There you go. Meta notes.
Hey, we're here to help.
Yeah.
Can I tell you?
Yeah. Okay. So next, John on his super secret mission.
Yeah. So
he actually got injured by it. I mean, you know, got a cold and everything.
Yeah. I went out a work trip where I had to fly for the first time since 2019. I'd been able to successfully avoid that. And so I had some travel observations that were somewhat interesting because they're related to mobile tech for the most part. The first was that I'm quite amazed. I had to reinstall, of course, all the airline apps that I needed. The two airlines I was flying were United and American. And I thought naively, well, you know, it's a vertical industry. They're all going to have about the same features, the same, you know. No. The United app was a lot better designed and had sort of live activities on iOS and actually had information in the card and Apple Wallet and I really want. It had some value. The American app was garbage in a sense. I mean, it had the bare minimum what I would expect in 2010 and, you know, 2023. And I thought that was sort of interesting, especially since now you have those apps, plus you've got Expedia's app and, you know, anything else third party that you're trying to deal through. So that was an interesting aspect, although I was grateful that apparently, you know, in 2019, even though Apple Wallet had been around for 4 or 5 years at the time, hardly anything supported. Now, it all the boarding passes all went there. And,
oh, nice.
No problem on that. Of course, you have no idea, you know, your boarding pass and anything else, what your particular airport's going to want. So the TSA checkpoints I went through, neither of them cared about boarding passes at all. They all wanted ID. Yeah.
Is that right?
So yeah, one of them, it was, you know, the full take your laptops out, take your liquids out, everyone. Mm-hmm. The other one, it was just, no, leave everything in and we'll figure it out. They still had to take my laptop out and do a magic test on it to see if it was a real laptop or not. And, so yeah, you never quite know what you're going to get, for those that have non-traveled in a while and think, well, maybe things have gotten better.
No.
They've just gotten stranger or weirder in other ways.
I can recommend, as somebody who did do a lot of travel before, for business before COVID hit, and has traveled since, I do recommend if you're going to be traveling more than a couple of times a year, the investment when you talked about pulling things out, TSA pre, mm-hmm. is...
Hell yeah.
Once you get your number, all of the apps that I use for the airlines support you adding that to your profile.
Mm.
So it just shows up on your boarding pass, whether it's physical paper or even in the apps, it shows that you're TSA free. And depending on the airport that you're going through, I travel almost exclusively. We've got a small regional, but I travel almost exclusively out of Logan Air.
Ew, and... I'm sorry.
Well, no, the airport's gotten better.
That's it?
Around the airport.
Yeah, that's the pits.
Yeah, they're going through their annual. The only airport that I find more fascinating is if you've never flown into LaGuardia.
Oh.
They just done an entire revamp at LaGuardia, which means it's about time to start the next entire revamp of all
that. I have only flown into LaGuardia once, and that was enough, by the way. That was like back in 2010. So it's a while, you know? So I assume it's approved. I think they did a renovation and stuff. But I remember flying into it, and we landed, and I looked around. I said, oh, no, it's happened. It's a Twilight Zone moment. I'm in 1950. How do I get back home?
I flew, to put it in perspective, I was shuttling back and forth to in December of 2020, just before COVID shut down.
Yeah.
I was shuttling back and forth to LaGuardia, and they were doing a combination of terminal and renovation and road renovations. I heard they just finished.
Oh, yeah.
Weird. Which, like I said, means that everything's outdated and they're going to have to change it again.
Oh, boy.
Anytime soon. Sometimes.
Of course.
But recently, interestingly enough, when you talk about the apps to save you time, while TSA is good within the United States and almost every airport today supports the TSA pre, that doesn't apply for coming back into the United States from international travel, but there's a app that is provided as well that's sort of an equivalency in terms of your paperwork and everything.
Yeah.
And I can't remember. I think it's
I had TSA Global.
NBC is or something like that. That saved recently coming back from Mexico because you provide all the information and they put you into a separate line instead of several minutes.
Oh yeah, that's I had TSA Global for a number of years, which I let lapse. But yeah, that was a real time saver.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also sanity saver.
Yeah. Yeah. Depending on the airport that you're flying in and out of, I can remember Atlanta, it was a huge time saver at Hartsfield.
And in LAX, it was no help at all.
Well, LAX is no help at all in general.
Tell me about it.
True.
But at any rate, well, Mike, back to John's adventure. You have a few comments about Marriott. Tell us what you really
feel. So Marriott has their app now that are supposed to allow you to unlock your hotel room door.
Oh, that sounds dangerous.
It doesn't work. Don't worry about it. I couldn't get it to work at all. But what's interesting is, of course, it's got a chat with the front desk feature.
Oh.
Okay. Which I thought, well, let's see if this is actually going to happen. So one night I went back to my room and I thought, well, I'll have some. I violated something I knew was a bad idea, but I thought, well, we'll see it happen.
Great, great.
We'll try to actually make something with the coffee maker in the room. Knew that was a bad idea. And it was verified when I found sediment and other crap at the bottom of my cup. So I did not drink any of that. But I did think I should let the front desk know that they might want to clean this thing at some point. So I opened up the app, and I'm like, well, let's see what this thing does. So I send a message to the front desk, and of course, I send out this whole thing. It was like, hey, letting you know, this room's coffee maker needs cleaned. It's disgusting, etc. Right. And no response other than an automated, this is so-and-so, this is Noella at the front desk. I'll talk to you shortly, and then nothing.
Nothing, yeah.
Noella vanished. Yeah, Noella vanished. In fact, I was still in a new...
Did you go to the front desk and check on Noella? No. Should have gone up and said,
God, is
Noella said she'd be right with me, and then she disappeared. I'm worried for her safety.
You know I care, and you know that this is exactly the sort of thing that I would be concerned about. But I also feel like I should respect the systems in place for such a thing. So I went to what used to be Twitter, is now X, and promptly... let the bottom boy hair's Twitter account know that Noella was missing.
Oh,
I put the link in our notes for the tweet that I put out.
I'm going to look at it now.
Noting that I literally said, you may need to search and rescue team in DC for Noella. She's been looking me up for quite a while. Also, might want to clean your coffee machine more while you're in the neighborhood.
Was that I'm put a link looking for white vinegar so that she could actually clean your coffee?
Oh my goodness!
Well, you know, I'm kind of curious now, so I'm opening the app. I haven't opened the app in a week. I wonder if the conversation is still even in there. If I go to my past trips, you know, I really was concerned.
Noella, bud, or Noella.
But no, as far as I know, Noella never surfaced. And of course, my Bomboy just sent me a message like, oh, we're so sorry to DM us with the detail.
Yeah.
But you know, it's really in that post I already sent you. So at this point, it's on you. Moral of the story, if you're going to have AI doing things, it should hand off to an actual person at some point instead of just
going in.
I assume what was supposed to happen is after I got the thank you for using the mobile app, I was supposed to say something else to it to engage that I was still there. But it didn't say to do that. It just
kept
me hanging for hours.
You know, the perfect ending to your story, obviously you had a bad ending, but the perfect ending to your story would, a security bot would have come to your door and, you know, do whatever the equivalent of a bot with no arms knocking.
They wouldn't have used the app to open the door, clearly.
Exactly.
Yeah, because it doesn't work. But that would have been perfect.
The way that I sort of fixed the problem was I just simply left the cup with the sediment inside of it on the counter next to the coffee machine and put a note that said needs chain cleaning, see sediment in cup.
Yeah.
And I figured that's a good enough way to let them know that there was a problem.
And please check Noella.
Yeah, I figured at that point Noella might not want to be found, so I wasn't gonna.
Wouldn't it be great if there was suddenly a knock on John's door right now?
Yes.
Mr. Westfall, my name is Noella. Thank you for looking out for me. They made me walk here all the way from Washington. That's why I'm a week late. I was kidnapped, but by some strange coincidence, they dropped me off in your town.
Yes.
And it was only through your concern that they appeared for their own safety and they let me go.
Yeah, the Marriott,
just as likely as anything else.
John, it's either that or you should have gone full Liam Neeson, take it.
Yeah.
I will again.
He posted a photo in Google.
I mean, you have to remember, I do have in my X or Twitter bio the joke from Taken. It's, if you're looking for specifics, I can tell you I don't have them, but what I do have is a very disturbingly broad set of skills.
Ah, oh, boys.
Funny. I will say, I'm about to preface this by saying, don't be angry with me, Marriott, because I'm a frequent Marriott user. Please don't come after me. But I have found that you can roll the dice with that unlock your door with. As a matter of fact, it was a few years back. I was at some place where the app said, "Oh, you can unlock the door."
Right.
I went to check in, and at that point, I had tons of points, and the guy was really nice. "Oh, let me give you some complimentary water to take to your room." And he said, "Well, you could unlock your door with your phone as well now too." And I said, "Thanks. Could I have my key, please?"
Without it.
This app also let me check in, but then my room still wasn't ready until 2 hours after check-in. The app didn't notify me it was ready. I had to go to the front desk and get notified.
Because they've been obsessive compulsive with me. It's the exact opposite. That
they like you,
They will know it's not going to be ready until this time, and then I get the notification.
John, what you should have done is, you say the phone can unlock the door, but I'll tell you what, that slot is way too narrow to fit my phone in.
It's all.
Do I just slide the phone under the door, or is that the way it goes at this point?
Now that you're saying that they may not like you, Noella may be gone because of you as well. You just need to think about that, John. You tried to reach out to her, and they're like, "No, no.
I'm okay with that. I have no remorse.
You can live with that.
I can live with that."
Some of the chatbots, it's interesting. I have to say, a lot of the chatbots for me, for my aging mind, passes a Turing test, and I'm not really sure what I'm talking to. So sometimes I'll ask the chat, whatever the chat entity, "Are you a bot or a person?" And sometimes they get like a little like, "I am a person." It's like, really? In what sense? But anywho, it's getting better.
Other fun observations. Apple noise cancellation on AirPods 2 can pretty much drown out an 80 decibel jet engine. I was pretty impressed by that sitting there. But then that made me think, as I'm sitting there dead to the whole world around me, why don't airlines have visual cues when announcements are being made? Everyone on that whole plane is zoned out. The visual cue plus 2 to 3 seconds of wait, so they can actually
listen,
would be amazing. But that doesn't seem to have crossed the
But that's mind. Going to be fixed when, I've got the original AirPods Pro, so it won't be fixed here. But I think for yours, that's going to be fixed in the next iteration, right? They're going to add some of the, what's the Apple VR headset technology? What's that thing called? I forgot already. Whatever it's called. They're going to add that so that if there's an external, like somebody's talking to you, the AirPods will temporarily turn off the noise
canceling. There is already the ability in your iPhone to detect certain key sounds and to alert you to those things. So things like doorbells and babies crying and things like that, your phone could detect those and tell you they're happening. So,
yeah.
Well, I think the other thing too to keep in mind is that the airlines are completely satisfied with the fact that if you're plugged into their TV unit watching something, they'll interrupt the audio from that pronounce. They figure that's good enough.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But you're right. As a result of that, all of a sudden you'll see a bunch of people looking around and, you know, at times and going, what are they talking about? Or I've had a time sitting on a plane and I'm one of those that when I'm sitting in my seat, I've got my belt on, but all of a sudden I start to see a lot of people buckling their seat belt. Well, I've got my head, I'm like, oh, okay. It's about to get a little choppy here.
Yeah, well, I think you read about, I think there's a flight out to Hawaii that suddenly dropped like 1,500 feet because the pilot and co-pilot, this is not even two planes. The people sitting next to each other did not communicate correctly. And so the co-pilot thought the pilot said something else and put the flaps up, I guess, point up.
Yeah.
And so the plane just dropped. But anywho.
Don't worry. They're going for re-education, according to the last, you know, retraining. But we can call it. And that's what it's probably going
to be. If it's like Soviet retraining, that's not good.
Would be up someplace.
Yeah, those pilots are at a pilot camp.
Yeah.
A lot of fun.
Yeah, is that like when your childhood dog is no longer there one day and your parents tell you went to camp?
Yes, that's went to go to the farm to play with the other animals.
Yeah.
The other pilots that weren't paying attention.
My
last little rant, if you're going to a conference that has thousands of people attending and you're going to do everything through a conference app, source something local on the device. Instead of making people wait 15 seconds for it to load up, download update, screen, just so you can click a little slider that says my itinerary and see. That's absolutely annoying. And if you're going to send push notifications to the watch about, hey, this event is starting, maybe tell someone where it is. Not just a notification saying, hey, it's starting. Oh, you never know where it is. Lots of luck.
This is starting in 5 minutes. That gives you 5 minutes to figure out where it is.
Local storage. We need to remind developers that modern phones, even the junky ones like my, well, it's not junky, but the lower end ones like my Pixel 7a with only 128 gigabytes of storage, has 128 gigabytes of storage, you know? I'm going to allow you to use a couple of megs of that at least, you know?
Probably, yeah. Probably cache at least, you know, for the dates, the locations, and the name of the sessions, you probably fit that in the 40K or so it would need, so.
Well, you know, these conference apps are all local. So, you know, there was no online, right? It was all local, and so they used up we had like megabytes of memory back then, and it was fine. It's okay, you know? And by megabytes of memory, I mean megabytes of solid-state storage memory, not RAM. We had even less of that. It's well, as you know, I've given up on traveling, but my daughter is
thanks to John, he's really sure to put that final name.
I have so many travel horror stories for myself and my friends. I'm sort of traumatized from traveling. My daughter, however, is not traumatized, and she's gonna think another 2 months in Tokyo. For your edification, or for our five listeners, this is what I've learned from my daughter, amongst other things. She's been there about a month now in Tokyo. If you go to the Tokyo Costco, their food court is way better than ours. Just way, way better than ours. So there you go. That is your foodie tip of the day. Food court at Tokyo Costco. And I think there's only one, so it's not like you have to look at a whole bunch.
I'm somehow not shocked. Somehow that scene was like a tracks ride.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, things you will not find in the U.S. aside from good food. I mean, I like Costco's food court, but just don't have the stuff they have at Tokyo. If you ever want to sit down and have a cup of coffee with a capybara, they've got a capybara cafe in Tokyo, which my daughter has, of course, gone to in her spare time. She's doing an internship there. If you want to sit with a giant rodent, capybaras 50, 60 pounds, maybe. Biggest rodent in the world. There you go. Capybara Cafe. You can look up a capybara.
I have
they're quite
the mini sized version known as the guinea pig. So
what's it say? I have a 50 something, 50 some odd pound dog that I can pretend to be a capybara.
Much more trainable. Much more trainable. All right. Okay. So thanks, gang. And just as a reminder for folks out there, I will put a link in to the Hawaii Community Foundation and also Charity Navigator if you want to check out other charities for things that you're interested in contributing to. Thanks to Don for joining us this week. And of course, thanks. I'm glad John is feeling better despite, you know, the health risks he took by going to a conference.
All this to talk about the benefits of open source software and open educational resources. I try.
Yeah. You know, nobody ever said that being an educator was, you know, without risk. I'm just saying that. Yeah. Everybody has risks. All right, folks. We will be back next week. Hopefully a pretty big panel. I think a bunch of our mutual friends are going to be available. So I'll talk to you later. Thank you, Don. Thank you, John. Thank you to all people whose names ended with O-N. Bye.